Welcome to the Real Estate Wealth Podcast, where we explore real estate as the most proven way to financial freedom. Join us for insights with leading experts and discover how vibrant health and an abundance mindset are the keys to true wealth. Welcome to part two of our interview with Brian Tracy. If you haven't yet listened to the first part of this interview, make sure to check it out. Without further ado, Brian Tracy. Hey, Brian, let's shift gears here and talk a little bit about some of the mistakes. Like, we've talked about what to do, but let's talk about mistakes and setbacks, which invariably come with people and when they're building a business or building a real estate empire. So what are some common mistakes that you've seen over the years, and how can people avoid those?
Well, I think the number one is that they don't think well enough in advance. Mm-hmm. And why your favorite tool, my favorite tool, is a pad of paper and a pen. Mm-hmm. Write things down. What you've learned, you know, every day you should examine what you've learned. And when you have a problem, I always say that there's nothing wrong with losing money, but it is unforgivable not to analyze what you did so that you don't repeat it. So whenever you have a setback or a difficulty, remember someone like Jeff Bezos, one of the richest people in the world, says we don't make mistakes here. We learn lessons. And everybody in the company at every level is encouraged to look at every single challenge or difficulty and look into it for the valuable lesson that they can use next time. So always seek the valuable lesson, and you will always find it. And be tough on yourself and say, and what else is a lesson? And what else did we learn? But what else is a great question? What else would we do differently next time? And what else have we learned that going to help us? And really push it. Don't be satisfied with a quick or a superficial or an easy answer. Really dig deep into it. You know, one of my favorite stories is the story of Thomas Edison. And Thomas Edison was the most prolific inventor in American history. At one time, 1/6 of Americans were working for a Thomas Edison company.
Wow.
1/6. And why? Because he just kept coming up with ideas that created complete industries. And when he was working on this idea of the electric light bulb, they all said it couldn't be done, it couldn't be done, it couldn't be done. And he said, it can be done, and it will be done, and I will do it. I will find the key. So they worked on finally finding this tungsten impregnated filament that in a vacuum glass that led to the invention of the light bulb. They were experimented like 130 times before they failed. Tried and failed, and week after week, and month after month, and year after year. And people said, you know, why are you doing this? Everybody knows that man was meant to light their way through life with kerosene lanterns. And he said, no, he said, there is a solution, and I will find it. And I'll not quit until I do. And eventually, suddenly they had the experiment, they turned it on, and the electric light worked, and it changed the world forever. You and I can even imagine not having electric light. Changed the world forever, but it was because of one man's stubbornness and determination and discipline and persistence. Just keep on and keeping on and keeping on. Now, one of the reasons why Edison was so successful was that he kept good notes. Is that every single thing they did, they wrote down, so that if I had hired a new scientist or a new engineer, is everything that had been done in a particular area was carefully recorded and organized so that a new person could start with the notes, experimental notes, and build on that. So that was not thought about at that time. At that time, they were just everybody would experiment and so on and so forth. And if it didn't work, they'd go on to something else. But he developed what is called the research laboratory. It was the critical thing that made Emerson great and made the United States great. Is this research laboratory was carefully tracking everything they did, talking about it, writing it down, so that the next generation of engineers had something to start from. And it's just with you and I, is when we take a spiral notebook, as you were talking about, and write down, what did I learn from this situation? And the more painful it is, the more important it is that you write down what you learned.
Right.
And don't say, well, I learned this and I learned that. No, force yourself, 10 things, 20 things. You'll be astonished. The deeper you dig for the lessons that you learn, the more likely it is you'll come up with profound lessons that may actually make you rich. And if you just try to cheap on it and just write down a couple of things that you learn, you're not giving yourself the full advantage.
I think that's super smart and important. I'm a big Thomas Edison fan myself, by the way, but in my office, I have a signed Thomas Edison original photograph with a letter that sits behind me. So he's kind of inspiration to me too. But I also love his famous quote, getting back to your hard work that we talked about at the beginning, right? Success is, I think he said, 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration, which I've always loved, right?
Well, there's this famous story, you'll probably know it, is one of his research laboratories caught on fire, and they sent him a message, and he came out and he watched, and the whole research laboratory was in flames, and it burned down with all the notes and experiments and everything else. And he called his wife. He said, honey, you've got to get over here and look at this. You're never going to see anything like this again in your whole life. And so his wife came, and they stood out there, and they watched the going up in flames. He said, do you know what we can do now? We can start over with none of the mistakes of the past to interfere with us. We can start brand new. And so he looked at it as a great opportunity. There's a way, by the way, a technique which I have taught to many businesses. And the technique is, imagine that you went to work one day and their entire building had burned to the ground. All right. Many companies have all kinds of ups and downs and so on. But just imagine you arrive at work and the factory business office is burned to the ground. Fortunately, the staff had gotten out into the parking lot so that nobody was hurt, but the business was gone. However, there was a good piece of luck is across the street was a new building that was unrented, unleased. And you could go and walk across the street. And this is the key. It's called the walk across the street method. You could walk across and start over again. Now, if you were going to do this, this very important thinking tool is, what products or services would you want to get up and into the market as quickly as possible? What customers would you contact? What would you do first? What would you do second? What would you want to get moving fast? Because you've got to get started. You've got to generate sales and revenues and so on. And that's the first part. And second of all your staff have been safely evacuated from the building. Which of your staff would you take with you to the new building? And which would you leave in the parking lot? And this is really, really important. This is called zero-based thinking. If you were starting over from scratch, what would you do more of? What would you do less of? So what products or services would you continue to offer? What products or services would you no longer offer? What people bring with you? What people would you leave behind? And so thinking like this is something I used to teach in strategic planning. And I've done strategic planning for more than 1,000 companies over the years. Wow. And I teach them this walk across the street method. Zero-based thinking is another technique I teach them, where you ask this question, is there anything that I'm doing today that knowing what I now know, I would not start up again today if I had to do it over? Zero-based thinking, I learned that from Peter Drucker many years ago, is draw a line under everything you've done in the past and imagine you're starting over brand new. Is there any product that you no longer bring to the market? Is there any person you would not hire or assign to a particular responsibility? Is there any investment that you would not make again today? Keep asking yourself, knowing what I now know, is there anything that I wouldn't do or start doing again from this day forward? And then have the courage to say, well, I wouldn't hire this person, or I wouldn't offer this product, or I wouldn't make this decision, and have the courage to cut it off. And the question is, when do you do this? And the answer is immediately. You know, there's an interesting thing. One of the biggest mistakes that people make is they hire the wrong person, and then they keep the wrong person, and so on. So one of the rules you ask is there anybody that's working for you that, knowing what you now know, if they walked in the door today, you would not hire them and put them in their current position? And if there is, then how do you get rid of them and how fast? And the rule is the very best time to fire a person is the first time it crosses your mind. Which is an interesting thought, because you'll find that what will happen, it'll cross your mind. And at that point, the situation cannot be remedied. It means mm-hmm. that the person is not a good person. I have a wonderful story. A man who was a consultant to a younger businessman. He was in his 60s, younger guy, was in 40s or 50s. And he would call on him about once a month and ask him, how are things going? So one day he calls in and he sits down and he says, how are things going? He said, well, I've grown well, but I have a problem. The problem is my accountant, who's been with me for 10 years, a friend of the family and everything else, the job is going too big for him. Our company is big. We have an enormous number of activities. He just simply can't handle it. He said, so what are you going to do about it? He said, well, I'm going to have to let him go. Although it's going to be very painful, I'm going to have to let him go, because I've got to get someone in there who is competent in dealing with a larger business. And he said, when are you going to do that? He said, well, I was thinking maybe at the end of the month. And he said, well, if you've decided to do it, this is the older man advising the younger man, if you've decided to do it, why are you going to wait till the end of the month? And he said, you know, you're right. I should do it on Friday. Do it at the end of the week. And he said, well, if you've decided to do it, why are you going to wait till the end of the week? And the businessman said, you're right, I should do it now. And so he got up, he said, wait here. And he went to the office of his friend and accountant. He told him that the job was just too big for him and he needed to get someone else because the company couldn't grow. And he did. And they had a very emotional agreement. They would leave and take care of him. So anyway, so he went back to the older man and said, what did you do? He said, I let him go effective immediately. He said, what did you learn from this experience? He said, what I learned was that once you make a decision of any kind, get on with it and do it immediately. Mm-hmm. Don't delay and don't drag it out. And I always loved that story because that's exactly true. The most important thing you can do is once you decide to make a decision of some kind, to get in or get out, get on with it. Do it immediately. And keep asking yourself, if I was not now in this situation, would I get into this situation? If I had not hired this person or brought out this product or service or made this investment, would I do it again today? And if the answer is no, stop it immediately. Get out like the house is on fire. Mm-hmm. This is a characteristic of good business people, is they are always willing to admit, I made a mistake. I was wrong. I did the wrong thing. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but they don't allow their ego to get involved in business. Now, one of the most important things that you have to ask, and I teach a course called Business Model Reinvention, and it's such a great course. Maybe you and I can talk about it at a later time. Mm-hmm. Basically, Business Model Reinvention forces you to stand back and look at your business model, which consists of 10 activities in a business, starting with what is it that you sell and who do you sell it to? And then the third thing, which is my point, is competition. In business, whatever business you're in, competition is sitting there. It's like an army on the move. It's the enemy that is going to determine your success or failure. So always ask, what is my competition? If I do this, what are they likely to do? What are they doing now? Because in order for me to be successful, I have to be better than my competition in at least one critical way. If I am not, then I don't have a chance. So always ask yourself, who is my competition? Because the competition determines how much you sell, how much profit you make, how fast your business grows, and everything. And everything has to be done with consideration to who is my competition and what are they likely to do now. And this is really important for success in real estate. The gentleman that I worked with, fabulous man, and he had years and years of experience. And so I would get an idea. Somebody would come to me on the side and I would take it to him. And he would say, well, look at this before you make any kind of a decision. Or think about this. Or here's something to do. And his experience opened his eyes to all kinds of negative possibilities that an inexperienced person doesn't have. So one last thing I would suggest is get yourself a mentor, not a coach, but maybe a coach, but a mentor, somebody who's older and more experienced than you, and meet with him or her on a regular basis and ask for their advice and take notes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that could literally save you years of hard work in making the right decision, in making good decisions, in earning greater profits, in not making mistakes, all those different things that which you have experienced over and over in your business.
Yeah. I mean, I think experience with experience comes wisdom, right? And so sometimes no matter how good you are, if you haven't gone through an experience, which maybe an older mentor could provide that has that wisdom, you just can't see it, right? And we get in our own way sometimes as well. And we don't want to hear oftentimes, you know, advice that we need to hear as well. But I think that, you know, with that comes that wisdom that a mentor could provide you.
They say that experience enables you to recognize a mistake the next time you do it.
Hey, Brian, let's shift gears and talk a little bit. We touched on mindset. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on mindset. Like when you bring up, you know, Edison and the lab burning down, and here's a guy where a lot of people would have looked at that situation and go, gosh, all my work, it's over, right? And Edison looks at it and goes, okay, we can start fresh here. It's a new beginning, which is completely tells me a lot about his mindset and the mindset of how successful people sort of approach a situation that's set up like that. I'd like to get your kind of thoughts on shifting a mindset and what it takes for someone to achieve success.
I've always said that you have to love your customers. It's one thing. You also have to love your product. Your product has to be something that you care about, that makes you happy. And you're much more likely to be come up with ideas if you're optimistic. So I always say that optimism, looking for the good in every situation and doing things well, which makes you happy. If you do that, you was Napoleon Hill who said that if you do work that you love, you'll never work another day for the rest of your life.
Right.
That's a great insight. So one of the things that you have to do is be really disciplined and make sure that what you're doing is something you enjoy and you think it's important and valuable for other people. And if you ever reach the point where you're not getting a buzz from your work, you're no longer enjoying it, well, then it means that it's time for you probably to move on to something else. Mm-hmm. And so smart people are continually adjusting and moving and trying something different. The critical thing is your work should make you happy. Mm-hmm. Work should make you happy. We should work with people that you enjoy. And then you should do work. And good work is always quality work. If you're in real estate, then you're always looking to improve the quality so your properties are easier to rent and to lease and to manage. They're more attractive to more people so that you can charge higher levels of rent so you can make greater profits so that your properties increase in value more and so on. So you're always looking for improvement. And improvement is the most powerful driving force in business success, is always looking for ways to improve what you do, but to improve the product or service that you offer to other people. And never be satisfied, never be satisfied. I say life is very much like a leapfrog game that kids play. Is you have to be better than your competition in order to compete successfully against them. And then they will find a way to leap over you and to be better than you. And then you'll have to leap over them and be better than them. And mm-hmm. It never stops until you retire. Mm-hmm. Never stops.
Yeah, Tony Robbins has the saying, can I, constant and never-ending improvement, right? Everything in your life is can I, constant and never-ending improvement. You have to look at improving all areas. of your life at all times. And it's that growth, right? That's how we grow and that's how we learn and that's how we get better.
I don't know about you, but most people listening to this probably started off with little or nothing. I mean, it's not as if we were born with silver in our mouth, lots of money and so on. Is in America and in the world, by the way, most people start off with nothing and they have to earn their money from the ground up. But wonderful thing is the latest research, which I study millionaires, is there's about 38 million millionaires in America today. 38 million out of 330 million people, about 10% of Americans and American families are millionaires. Now, how did they get there? Well, 77% of them started with nothing. Some of the others started with a little, if you like, or they got some money from their parents. But most millionaires are self-made in one generation. Most billionaires are the same thing, is they started with nothing. And at the beginning, it was very hard, very hard. But over time, with compounding, their homes became more valuable. Their knowledge and their skill enabled them to make more money and so on. And today, in the year 1900, there were 5,000 millionaires in America. Today, there's 38 million millionaires. Most people don't pass the millionaire mark until their late 40s and early 50s. In fact, they find that the number one year when people become millionaires is the age of 55. Recent study in Wall Street Journal, 55. And so people think, well, I want to be rich quickly. Well, you know, get rich slowly. Learn, upgrade your skills. Because wonderfully enough, that one-liner, the first million is hard, the second million is inevitable. And that's what I found. I mean, I was struggling and struggled and worked right up into my 50s. And then everything started to click. All the previous knowledge and skill and mistakes and building credibility and friendship with financiers and bankers and so on is it all started to click. And you earn more in the next 5 years than maybe you've earned in the last 25 years.
Yeah, Brian, I grew up in a very working class environment, south side of Chicago. My dad was an immigrant from Italy. He was a bricklayer and then started his own company. So I grew up in a very working class, blue collar environment. My father, to his credit, over time, kind of became the millionaire next door because he was always big on it's not how much you earn, it's how much you keep. And so compound interest became his friend, you know, over the years. But, you know, we grew up very working class, you know, Sears tough skin jeans that I wore for 3 years until they were too short environment. And I remember as a kid in high school, the town we lived in had a little river behind it, and something happened with the levee and it flooded. And so the town, or at least the few block radius where we lived, completely flooded, was underwater. People were bringing boats out and like rowing up and down the street, you know, waddling through this dirty water, which I was like, what are they thinking? And this was me as a high school kid. I remember, I think I was reading like a W. Clement Stone book or maybe Napoleon Hill, sitting in a lawn chair in my driveway, looking at sort of this chaos madness going on, just thinking like, I got to get out of here. There's a better path for me, right? And so fortunately, I had the opportunity to go to college in San Diego at USD. And that really was the beginning of, you know, life changing for me.
Wonderful.
Brian, let's talk a little bit about goal setting. I'm a huge fan of setting goals. And I'll tell you a little story that might be interesting to you, which I don't share very often. But, you know, when I got out of college at USD, I went into the commercial brokerage space at CBRE, selling apartment buildings. And, you know, I had a couple years of success. I was in my mid-20s, 25, 26, and then the S&L crisis hit. And sort of overnight, I found all of my clients were losing buildings, right? All of the banks and S&Ls at the time were going back. The RTC was created. And basically, the whole industry was completely disrupted. Here I am at 26 and running out of money, building up credit card debt. You know, I was in a bad, bad place and I was completely broke. I remember I had probably at the time, maybe $8,000 worth of credit card debt. which really seemed insurmountable back then, to the point where I actually had met with a bankruptcy attorney thinking like, gosh, is this my only way out? And this is a 26-year-old kid thinking like, is this my only option out? Which thankfully I didn't pursue that route, but I did think about it because I felt like, well, there is a way out of this situation. It is temporary. I'll figure it out. And I don't want to jeopardize my credit for the next 7 or 10 years, right? Yes. For something that small. And it was about that time that I came across your goals program. And so I'll never forget, it was, you know, like a rainy Saturday morning. I was at a very low point financially, emotionally, in every way. I was distraught. And I went into this coffee shop by my home, you know, near UTC in San Diego. And I sat there and I was listening to your program. And I basically just started writing goals. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote for about 5-6 hours in that coffee shop. And I basically kind of laid out, okay, here's my life over the next 20, 25 years. You know, from the, you know, what are you going to do in the next 6 months, 1 year, 5 year, 20 years plus? And I mean, I put down, you know, I couldn't even pay off 8,000 credit card at the time. And I was writing goals like, I will be worth over $50 million. I will have over $1 million of passive income. I will own over 1,000 apartment units. Pretty audacious goals for somebody in the situation at the time. But, yeah, you know, like you teach, you have to dream big and there's no obstacles and you just let it flow, right? And so now it's amazing. Like I still have that list that I wrote. This was, you know, in the early 90s. And it is astounding, Brian. It is astounding to me of the things on that list that I now have achieved and are part of my everyday life. It's really wild. So I am a huge believer in goals and written goals. And my wife and I still every year at the beginning of each year, we go away somewhere. And the trips have gotten better as the goals have come into fruition. We go away somewhere, usually pretty nice. And we'll sit down and we'll write our goals out for 3-4 days on a beach somewhere. We'll do family goals, goals for our kids, etc. And it's really become a powerful tool. And I love it. And I plan my week. You know, then I look back each week when I start and I kind of look at, okay, what are my goals? Who am I? What am I trying to achieve? And I sort of work backwards. So do you want to talk a little bit about written goals and the power and kind of your philosophy on goal setting?
Well, I am passionate about that. In fact, what I'm doing between talking to you is I'm rewriting my book, Goals.
I love it.
Yeah, this is the best-selling book on goals in history. It's sold almost...
I have it in my office, but...
yes. It's sold almost 1 million copies, and we hope by rewriting it to sell another 1 million. And it's life-changing. More people, when they say, you changed my life, you made me rich, I say, what was it about my material? Because I've written 93 books. What was it about my material that was so helpful? And they always say, they beam. Like the Cheshire Cat, they beam and they say, it was the goals. It was the goals. It changed my life. It was the goals. I had no understanding of how important goals were. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you and I could talk about this for a long time because setting goals was the turning point in my life as a young, broke, everything else.
Yep.
Here's the point is that each person has three minds. One is the conscious mind, which is the one we're working with now. The other is the subconscious mind, where you store all of your previous experiences. The third is what is called the superconscious mind. And I learned about this many decades ago. But the superconscious mind is a mind that connects you with the universe. And it is the source of the law of attraction, the law of correspondence, all the different laws. But basically, when you program a goal into your subconscious mind, it passes it on to the superconscious. So it's almost like if you have looked at it in an amusing manner, imagine you rented a house and you never went into the basement at all. And then one day, for some reason, you went to the basement, you find this massive supercomputer. It filled the whole downstairs. And this is a computer that you could put in any goal or objective and just push the button, and it would generate the goal or objective for you. It had such incredible powers. Well, each person listening to us today, every person, has a superconscious mind. most people don't use it. It's like it's a supercomputer in the basement. They don't even aware that it's there, and they don't use it. But the superconscious says that if you write a goal in a specific way, you program it into your superconscious computer, and the superconscious computer will bring you your goal at exactly the right time, in exactly the right way, at exactly the right time for you. But the most important thing for you for success, as you discovered when you were $8,000 in debt, is clarity. Clarity, you must be crystal clear about what it is you really want. And the 80-20 rule, 90-10, only 3% of people, according to research, are really clear about what they want to accomplish in the months and years ahead. And the only way that you can be clear is if you write it down in the present tense. You write it down in the present tense. Your subconscious and superconscious mind can only read it in the present tense. You can't say, I will earn, I will weigh, I will achieve. No, the superconscious cannot deal with a future tense, only the present tense. So I call these the three P's. They're positive, present tense, and personal. Personal is I, present tense is earn, and then positive, this amount of money. Mm-hmm. So the way that you program, there's a special way that your superconscious responds, is write it in the present tense as though it were already a fact. So for example, I say, I earn X number of dollars by December 31st, 2024. That's very simple. Einstein said a six-year-old child should understand your goal and be able to explain it to another six-year-old child, or you don't know what it is yourself. So that the kind of, I earn X number of dollars by this date. A six-year-old child could understand what you mean for your goal. And if you'll do that, I remember when I was about 23, 24, struggling, sleeping on the floor of a friend's one-bedroom apartment, I came across an article that said, if you want to be successful, write down your goals. You have to have goals. So I took a piece of paper and I wrote down 10 goals. And I promptly lost the piece of paper. But 30 days later, my whole life had changed. Mm-hmm. The major goal that I wanted was financial because I was struggling. And right. Then other health goals and travel goals and business goals and so on. And it was just absolutely revolutionary. If I was going to give our friends advice, it would be very simple. Take a piece of paper and write down 10 goals in the present tense. And then what I do is I encourage people to use a spiral notebook. I'll show you mine because I use it all the time. And the spiral notebook will make you rich. And it'll make you rich far faster than you could possibly imagine it. We're listening to the check. Here's my spiral notebook. And I have this, and I have others, and I have rows and rows. I can show you in my around my den here. I've got piles of these, and what I do is I take them out, I write down today's date, and I write down 10 goals. Then you can write historical things and plans for vacations and things like that, or tell what happened. But you write down your 10 goals every day. And mm-hmm. I have to tell you a fun story. I used to charge $5,000 for my coaching program, and that involved coming to me for one full day every 3 months. And people would say, well, you know, that's a lot of money. Is it worth it? How can I justify that? I say, well, I'll give you a guarantee, and I call it my double-double guarantee. And my double-double guarantee says that if you come to my program and follow the exercise that I teach you, every 3 months, I guarantee you will double your income and double your time off in that 12-month period. Now, the average minimum to come to my program was $100,000 a year. Some were $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, but you had to be earning a minimum of $100,000. So doubling that against a $5,000 investment, unconditionally guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody says, okay. And what happened was I had put 1,000 people through this program over 7 years, and I never had to give a refund. In fact, almost every single person in the program doubled or tripled their income in the first 90 days. And why? And the reason is, it's almost like it should be dishonest, but I knew that if they write them down, and I would hand out a magazine, like a book like this, I say, now I'm going to introduce you to your new best friend. This is going to be your best friend from now on. This is going to make you rich, successful, happy, and thin. And so I'm flipping through this, and I've had them write it out and explain how to do it. And surprise, surprise, they would double, triple their income, some five times, sometimes 10 times in a year. But 100% of them doubled their income in at least 90, in less than 90 days. So wow. I pass this on. I'm telling this story because I want to motivate our friends to do it. Now, people say, well, what if it doesn't work? No, that's not the right question. The right question is, what if it does work?
Right.
What does it cost you? It costs you, I used to joke, I say, it costs you $1.95 for a workbook. And if you can't afford it, your mother will buy it for you because she wants you out of the house. You know, so I always joke with that. And it is absolutely amazing how this works. I've taught it all over the world. And people come up, say, it changed my life. You made me rich. After several years, maybe two decades, I wrote this book on goals. I took every idea that I had ever found, and I always practice the idea before I write it down. I took every idea I'd ever found and wrote it into a system, a 21 chapter system that you can buy anywhere. And this has become the best book on goal setting in the world. And why? It's because it works. It works like a darn. It's almost like once you followed my instructions and written out your goals exactly the way I explained, it's almost like you could just relax and everything will start to work. Everything starts to work. Your life works. You meet people. You talk to people. You see articles. And it's almost like you've heard, of course, the law of attraction. When you set up a force field of energy that starts to attract into your life all the people and resources that you need to achieve the goal.
Right. Like somehow the mind has almost a magnetic pull, if you will, right?
Yes.
Hey, Brian, you talk a little bit about the superconscious or subconscious. I guess they're slightly different. So, I mean, how do you explain? Because it is amazing. And I completely agree with everything you're saying. And when you state things in the present tense, right? I am, you know, worth X, or I am, you know, fit and healthy, the brain does figure out a way to achieve it because it wants to be right, I think, right, in a weird way. Or like, is there an explanation? Have you studied anything about the superconscious mind and sort of how we're able to attract things like that?
The expression in psychology is called cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine two symbols clashing, bang, dissonance that creates noise, what happens is your income today is, let's say it's $100,000 a year, and you write down, I earn $250,000 by the end of this year. Well, that creates a clash between where you are today and where you are saying you are. And so you're saying you earn $250,000, but the reality is you're only earning $150,000. But you keep saying, I earn $250,000, and this creates this clash of this dissonance. And what happens is your subconscious and superconscious eyes go to work to make your new command your actual reality. And that's why clarity is so important. And the only way you have excellent, absolute clarity is write it down, write it down, write it down. Some people write their goals down once a year. But you know what happened if you wrote your goals down once a day? The speed, it's almost like slamming your foot on the accelerator of your own life. You start to make progress and you start to come up with ideas and see things and people stop. It's just the most amazing thing. And the wonderful thing is there's no downside. It's not as if you could be hurt using this methodology. What it requires is discipline to sit down and spend 5 minutes, it's 3 to 5 minutes to write down your major goals each morning and then get on with the rest of your life. And you'll set up this force field of energy, which you're talking about, this law of attraction, and it will start to draw into your life all the resources that you need to make your goal come true.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, you can't find anybody who will tell you it didn't work. They all, when they come up to me all over the world, they say, it worked faster than I ever thought possible. I couldn't believe it. And the coincidences that take place are really remarkable. As you run into somebody, a friend calls you, who you used to know in school, and they're doing this, or you see an article in a newspaper that's doing that. I mean, you just have to sort of be like a child in Disneyland. You're just walking around where, wow, this is really neat. Well, what starts to happen in your life is really neat. Health goals, family goals, college goals, car goals, exercise goals, travel goals. I mean,
right. It's as if you unlock a part of your brain that now recognizes opportunities that were always there, but you can see them, quote unquote, before, right?
Right. Well, you know, one of the things my wife and I set as a goal is that we visit Paris in the springtime and spend a week in Paris. So that came true relatively quickly by the next year. And we said, that was really good. And a couple of years later, we said, why don't we go back to Paris? So we did. And then a couple of years later, we went back one more time. I said, we're tired of Paris. And you know, there's an expression, a very famous expression in Europe saying, anyone who is tired of Paris is tired of life. Spent so much time in Paris. He said, would you like to go to Paris? Oh, God, I've been to Paris. How about funny. Rome? Oh, Rome, London. Oh, go back to London. Berlin. In other words, those things which seemed like such extraordinary things. And we stayed in first class hotels and went to some of the best restaurants in the world when we were in Paris, because surprise, surprise, once we set Paris as a goal, we started to make more money so that we could afford fly, and we flew first class to Paris. And I mean, it was just so astonishing. Mm-hmm. First time I went to Paris, I was in a Volkswagen van. I was a teenager, traveling around Europe. And now here I am. It's just astonishing. So this, what I'm saying is just give it a try. And here's the interesting thing is the more confident you are that you're going to achieve the goal, the more relaxed you are about it, the faster it comes true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just have to believe. Brian, let's talk a little bit about leveraging time. You've written a lot. You've taught a lot about time management is kind of a big theme in the work you've done. How can people better leverage their time, right? Because you always hear like, I don't have enough time to work out. I don't have time for X. But, you know, the fact is we all have the exact same 24 hours in a day. You do, I do, Jeff Bezos does, Elon Musk does, and they get a lot more done than I do. Yes. So let's talk about leveraging time and how people can best do that.
Well, this is one of the most important things in the world, because I always say that you have two primary resources, time and money. Mm-hmm. And when you start off as a young person, you have lots of time and very little money. Now, your job is to change the ratio, is to change it so that as your time passes, you have maybe less time, but you have more money. Now, time and money can be either spent or it can be invested. If you spend it, it's gone forever. Like if you waste your time and you entertain yourself and spend it on recreational activities, it's gone forever. But if you invest your time, you can turn it into knowledge, skill, ability. If you invest your money, you can turn that into eventually a fortune over time. Well, now here's an interesting discovery, is that they have analyzed and interviewed thousands of people. They find that the average person spends about 1 hour a month studying money. Hmm. 1 hour a month, and it's almost always at bill paying time. I'll remember bill paying time.
Right.
Sit down at the end of the month and you pay your bill. And that wealthy people spend about 10 hours a month studying money. What does that mean? Well, they read the financial papers to see what's going on. I read the financial papers every single morning. I read the Wall Street Journal, but I also take Fortune, Forbes, Business Week, and other financial magazines, and they give you little ideas and insights. They're written by some of the smartest people about money. Mm-hmm. And just one insight can change your life. Here's an insight, by the way, that is very precious. It is that you are earning today exactly the amount that you have designed yourself to earn. Mm-hmm. That a company is earning exactly how it has been designed to earn. If you're not happy with what you're earning, then you need to change the structure. You need to change your organization. You need to do things differently. But the fact is that you are earning exactly what you have decided to earn by the structure that you have.
Now, I totally agree with that.
And so you and I are very familiar with the concept of self-responsibility. Is superior people accept high levels of responsibility for themselves. They don't make excuses. They don't blame other people. They don't look outside themselves. They say the magic words, I am responsible. If I'm not happy with anything in my life, I am responsible for changing it. Nobody yes. else is going to do it for me. Mm-hmm. That attitude is the attitude of the truly superior person. They don't make excuses. They don't blame other people. They say, I'm responsible. That's one of the reasons why people say, you changed my life. You made me rich. I realized that everything I accomplished is up to me. It's not up to someone else. I've been waiting for someone to come along. I've been waiting for lightning to strike.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, right? It's like, yes, I live by that. Like, if it went wrong, it's my fault. If it went right, it's my fault. If it's great, it's my fault. If it's bad, right? Everything is up to you. And you got to take responsibility. And it's the ultimate, I think, form of maturity, which I try to tell my kids, right? Be responsible for everything you do because you're in control. And I think that's the real message, right? It's like once, and that was kind of the original, I think, Napoleon Hill message, like you have control. Your mind has control of your destiny, which yeah. I'm not sure up to that point people really realized. You know, hey, Brian, I think we kind of need to wrap up here, but I just want to get your thoughts before we leave on the future. And, you know, you've been around for a little while now. I think I sent you a text. You turned 80 recently. And I said, hey, Brian, 80 is the new 60. So you still got some time left and you're still writing books and doing great things, which is amazing. But, you know, in looking at the future, kind of where do you see things? And you know, we're all kind of concerned, good or bad, about things like AI that could be a complete game changer for all of our lives, I think. And I'm just curious as to your perspective right now on where you see things.
Well, a spiritual writer once said that the only attitude worthwhile having is the attitude of optimism. Mm-hmm. It's just a complete belief that the world is a good place to be in and it's only going to get better. We here in America are so blessed. We have the most entrepreneurial country in the world. We have people coming legally and illegally from all over the world to want to be here to mm-hmm. just get a piece of the action, just to have an opportunity to perform. One of my friends still now is William Bennett, who was the Minister of Education in the Reagan years. And he was talking to a high school class in Chicago. And one of the students said, Mr. Bennett, how can you tell if a country is a good country or not? Because there's all these negative articles and stories about why America's got all these problems. And he said, well, it's very simple. He said, just open the gates and see which way the people go.
That's the case, we have the greatest country in the history of mankind based on the influx we got going on right now, right?
Absolutely. Now, here's another thing is that people will come here both legally and illegally, but we take in legally in the United States more immigrants than all the other countries in the world put together. Mm. And now with the situation on the southern border, it's millions more than
right.
We expected. This is a wonderful country and a wonderful time and place to be alive. This is the best it's ever been in all of human history. Mm-hmm. There are no limits. We have a wonderful legal system that protects us. We have a wonderful banking financial system. Everything is great. And so therefore, it's the question of the glass half full or the glass half empty. And our glass is half full. This is a wonderful thing. So anybody watching you and I talking, we both have the same attitude, is this is the greatest time in all of human history to be alive. You can accomplish more today than has ever been possible, except for next month and next year and 5 years from now. And so that's how you get up every morning and say, wow, this is the greatest time, the greatest place to be alive.
I think that's terrific. And I completely agree with you. Hey, Brian, one final question, if I can. You know, could you describe your legacy to me? I mean, you've done a lot for so many people. You've taught for decades. You've enriched the lives of millions of people, literally. How would you most like to be remembered?
Well, I fell in love with personal development many years ago, decades ago. And I spent hundreds, thousands of hours studying some of the intricate things that we've talked about. And my goal at that time was very selfish. I just wanted to use these ideas on myself. Mm-hmm. I wanted to improve the quality of my life and that of my wife and that of my children. But then I got this idea that I could multiply myself with books and audio programs and videos and put them into multiple languages. My programs are now in 55 languages.
Wow.
There's people all over the world who train on video in their language with my programs, with workbooks and everything else. So my goal, I have what I call an attitude of gratitude. And is I am so grateful for the wonderful things that have happened to me in my life. And I just want to share them with as many people as possible, and with no limits. So that's what I do. I think of a book, and I've written 93 books, but I think of a book that would appeal to at least a million people.
Mm-hmm. And
don't hit bullseyes every time, but it's astonishing how many millions of people have read some of my works or listened to them and actually changed their lives in a positive way. So that's my great goal in life, is to help as many people as possible and to leave a legacy of books and tapes and programs that other people can then take. One of the things I want to do is shorten the amount of time that it takes for individuals to fulfill their potential and to achieve their goals. And by taking all of the best things I've ever learned and putting them into actually learnable and usable forms, it enables me to have those people come up and say, you changed my life and made me rich.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. That's what I had in mind.
Well, I think you will definitely leave that legacy and have changed a lot of people's lives. So thank you for that. And Brian, just thank you for joining me today on the show and sharing your invaluable wisdom and insights. And I believe our audience will be both motivated and inspired to pursue their own success journeys by applying some of the principles that we spoke about today. What's the best way to find you, Brian, these days? If somebody wants to learn more about your work.
bb@briantracy.com. I have a company, business, all kinds of staff working at different levels, but this is basically Brian Tracy, bb@briantracy.com.
Or just your website, briantracy.com. It kind of has all your stuff on it too, right?
Exactly. And there's an enormous amount of free stuff there too, because when I started off, I couldn't afford anything. So I try to make a lot of stuff free that mm-hmm. you use. And then there's other stuff that you can buy, but you don't have to.
Okay. Yeah, now there's some great stuff on your website. I've been to it. Well, thank you again, Brian. I appreciate you spending all the time with you today, and God bless you. Take care.
You, Ed. We'll talk again.
I hope today's show inspired you just a little bit, and I would like to thank my guests once again. I'm excited to bring you more episodes with interesting and informative experts to help you navigate your way to wealth and health.
Thanks for listening to the Real Estate Wealth Podcast. The Real Estate Wealth Podcast is produced by Truthwork Media. Our producer is Seth Creekmore, with support from McKenna Smith. For show notes and more information about this podcast, visit edalloy.com. For more information about CalCap Advisors, visit us at calcap.com or follow us on Twitter @CalCap Advisors.
I'm your host, Ed Alloy, and thank you for listening.